You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is a businessman and entrepreneur, an award-winning businessman and entrepreneur, Roland Parrish, whose philanthropy has changed thousands of lives, not only in North Texas, but worldwide. And I'm pleased to say he is a very good friend of mine. How are you doing, Roland?
Hey, it's great to be online with the three-time Hall of Famer, Chris Arnold. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I appreciate you. Hey, let's talk about you. And I know it's always hard for people to talk about themselves, but I want to talk about you in the context of the things that you have done to impact so many lives. And you've done this so low-key. You know, there may be a few people who know who you are, and I think you kind of like it like that. I think you like being low-key with the things that you do. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, Chris, if I can probably tell you a quick Junior Bridgman story.
Sure.
I know you know who Junior Bridgman is.
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, you remember when the Olympics were in Sydney and you and your family went?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I wound up on a flight to those Olympics sitting next to Junior Bridgman and his wife.
Wow.
Former Milwaukee Buck.
Uh-huh.
And a big-time entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so what happened... Ulysses Junior Bridgman, and I knew his father better, Ulysses Senior, better than Junior, and mm-hmm. I ran track against his brother, Sam. But Junior and I were in the same class coming out of high school, and we're in that little suburbs outside of Chicago, East Chicago, Washington, Gary, and mm-hmm. Hammond, Indiana. And anyway, and our families have married and intertwined in marriage. So 2 years later, Junior was at Louisville, and he was obviously an outstanding basketball player. I was a pretty good track athlete at Purdue University. And I was around some of Junior's family, which was some of my family. And his sister, April, said, Junior was in Sports Illustrated. He had his picture in Sports Illustrated, and he didn't tell anybody. And I thought about that because I took Sports Illustrated from sixth grade on, still mm-hmm. take it. And I remember the picture. And it's like, man, he was in Sports Illustrated, which was big. That was big, sophomore, making Sports Illustrated a picture, and he didn't tell anybody. And I had the opportunity to tell Mr. Bridgman this story about 2 years ago because, we don't run in the same circles. But I decided then, I was like, you know what? If you could do things that people would be proud of you, but let other people tell the story. And so I was able, we're at the same conference. He sort of remembered me from high school, track and field. And I left, came back and said, Mr. Bridgman, I may never see you again. I got to tell you a Junior Bridgman story. And I told him that. And so that's what set the tone there is always achieve and try to achieve and do the right things and do things before people. And Luke 12:48 is my biblical foundation to whom much is given, much is required. But my Junior Bridgman pillar is, hey, let other people tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be braggadocious. So that's my Junior Bridgman story.
Well, you know what? It matches the way you've been leading your life and the way you've been giving back. In fact, you have been quoted as saying your ministry is to help people. Just help people. Do the things to help others and share your blessings that God has given you, and you can continue to help people. So I like that philosophy. And is that how you decide and determine how, your foundation impacts people?
Yeah, and Chris, I know that, foundations, setting up a foundation was new for me. I don't come from a family where we had a lot of money to give. My parents, it's like time and talent. They mm-hmm. gave a lot of their talent. They gave a lot of their money. It's just that we didn't have sophisticated organizations. And so they worked hard in the community and did a lot for the community. And so what happens with me is you know, have the foundation set up. We want to help people. And a lot of times it's really more proactive, reactive. I'll come across someone who's in need. I'll assess quickly that they're sincere. I'll assess quickly that I can afford it. And we may try to do something pretty quick. That's what was in the Dallas Morning News with for Oak Cliff, the organization in South Dallas, where Taylor Torrance and Xavier Henderson, two former school teachers with SMU backgrounds, bought a YMCA in the Glendale area and converted it to community center. And I was going there for my first time, had read about them, and had to make a hook on Westmoreland, going east, and had to turn back west, and saw this empty swimming pool. And after the meeting, had the discussion, well, what do we need to do to get the pool up? And so we have a comprehensive program where not only did we get the pool open, but we have lifeguards who are the older children from the community who now can get trained right there. Someone on staff can train them to be lifeguards. We put enough money in so that they have a summer job. And then that way there's a pool, there's lifeguards. And the little kids can play in the pool and learn how to swim. So that was pretty quick and reactionary to get it done. And I know as the organization grows, the foundation grows, it won't be like quick decisions like that. Sometimes it'll have to go all the way through the board and get voted on and scrutinized. But right now it's kind of fun where I can be reactionary. And again, if people are sincere and I know I can afford it, we can act pretty quick and help people.
I love it. We're talking with Roland Parrish. He's the CEO of Parrish Restaurants. And I think, I don't have the exact number because I've heard various numbers. You own and operate about 27 to 29 McDonald's restaurants in and around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In fact, the very first one you built was in Pleasant Grove. And I want to talk about the fact that you have all those restaurants, but McDonald's turned you down when you applied to own a franchise. And I think you used your entire savings account to get your very first McDonald's restaurant. Can you talk about that process and how you never gave up?
Yeah, Chris, that's a story when I think about that guy who was about 35 years old, who I feel challenged a Fortune 500 company. So I filled out an 8-page application and I was rejected. And with the athletic background, and I was a scholar athlete, so I was a successful student, a successful scholar, and a successful athlete at the high school and collegiate level, and have to throw in my alma mater, Purdue University.
Yeah, shout out to Purdue.
Yeah. And so the application was rejected, and I felt I was a winner, not being braggadocious, because I felt I'd be accepted with open arms. And I always talk about, you got to be humble. That's something I talk about. So I worked for a corporation at that time, Exxon Corporation, which was like the largest corporation in the world at that time. And this was in the mid 80s. And I began to call. Ruth Anderson was the name at the bottom of the letter, the reject letter, which I have framed in my office. And I would call her Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 o'clock. And she was never in. And I did this for about 6 weeks. And so finally one day, the receptionist said, just one moment. And Chris, I had not prepared anything. So when she came on the phone, you know, identified myself, told her the date of my letter and that I had been rejected. And so I began what turned out to be your elevator speech. I didn't realize it. So I asked her if they had, you know, I talked about my degrees. I had two degrees from Purdue, two business degrees. And she says, well, degrees don't mix with McDonald's very well. And I didn't realize at that time that of all the CEOs at that time, none had had a college degree. You know, it was an organization that was founded in California by the McDonald's brothers, but Ray Kroc eventually wrestled ownership and built his first restaurant in the Chicago area. So it was a Midwest company. And as successful as they were there, CEOs didn't have college degrees. So that was strike one. Strike two quickly was, I asked if they had a minority program. She said, no. And so when I talk about being humble, when I worked for Exxon, I had to, even though I was in finance and accounting and distribution and engineering, I had to work at service stations. And I had friends who had corporate jobs where they were in Europe or Asia or Jamaica, and I had to go to Jackson, Mississippi. But I ran a service station in Lehigh, Arkansas, ran a group of service stations in Jackson, Mississippi. And so for some reason, I started talking about service stations. And service stations are similar to restaurants in that they're retail profit centers, usually standalone in communities. And so there's so many commonalities, time clocks, uniforms, mm-hmm. restrooms, landscaping, interacting directly with the customer on a retail basis. And there's something in the background called direct retail accounting. And so she didn't cut me off. And so with that, I was able to begin the 9-month process, the application process, to get into 2-year program where you work 2 years free in a McDonald's for no pay, 2 years free to McDonald's, no pay, for 25 hours a week to learn their systems and to learn their culture. And so it ended up being a 2 years plus 9-month process before I actually opened in Pleasant Grove at Loop 12 and Horn Freeway. And so that's the story. And it had to be the best elevator speech I ever gave.
Oh, wow.
Even though at that time I didn't realize it was an elevator speech. Because some people say he filled out another application. I never filled out another application. And so I do thank Ruth Anderson. I thank Exxon for the opportunity that I had. And I learned how to run a direct retail operation through service stations. So that's what happened. Opened in Pleasant Grove. We trained in Houston, Texas. That's where we were living at that time, working for Exxon. And we lived in the Woodlands. I went to church in Acres Homes, and I worked downtown. So I saw quite a bit of Houston during any given week. But we were given opportunity, and we took it to go to Pleasant Grove, which some consider an underserved community. But I was right at home, being from Hammond and Gary, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Chris, God planted me in Pleasant Grove, because if I had been in a suburb, there would have been people that I would not have met, that I met who were community leaders because of that being in the southern sector. You know, Pleasant Grove, South Dallas, Oak Cliff. And so that was my area. And I began to meet leaders, community leaders, obviously principals, teachers. I'll even say the ministers, I mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches,
sure.
You know, even the drug dealers, mm-hmm. In the community, and they began to respect what I was trying to do. I got my second restaurant in Pleasant Grove 2 years later in 1991, and just became a part of the community and began to meet again some prominent people, Dr. Harry Robinson of the African American Museum, Helen Giddings, who would end up being a state representative, and others from the community. I began to meet them, being right there in the community.
You told me a story a few years ago about how you had an idea to help provide the food for some picnics, a charity picnic or something. It was about, okay, what makes sense? And it was able to bring a lot of people together. And that was one of the other philanthropic things you did initially.
Well, if it's the one I recall was, you know, I'm this guy who's got a couple restaurants in Pleasant Grove, and I get a message that U.S. Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson
wants
to visit me.
Yep.
With me.
Yep, this is the story.
And I'm like, what does Ms. Johnson want with the hamburger flipper from Pleasant Grove? And so went to visit with her, and she wanted to have a community picnic, annual, grassroots, not for show and pomp and circumstance, but for her people,
mm-hmm.
People in the community. And her initial thought was probably, since I was a restaurant tour guide, that we would have Big Macs and Quarter Pounders in the McDonald's menu. And so I mentioned to her that I said, you know what? McDonald's really doesn't do well as a picnic food. I said, but why don't we put together and identify minority vendors who have these catering services. And we did that. I footed the bill, found the vendors, and that was over 20 some years ago. And some of the caterers I still use. And so we were able to do that for the community. And with that, I earned the respect and I earned favor from the U.S. Congresswoman, Ady Bernice Johnson. She met my family. She met my employees. And again, my family earned favor. My employees earned favor. And we became a friend of the U.S. Congresswoman. And so that really, really worked out well for me. It really worked out well. It was great. Never asked me any favors or anything, but to be able to, if I needed to contact the U.S. Congresswoman. And we used to have some great discussions because obviously I got to a point where I would contribute to her campaigns. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have lunch together. Sometimes my daughter would join us. She became a really good fan. And eventually my daughter became her sorority sister. And I remember she had, and this is, I think, common with our public servants. They may have two offices. One is the official office of their, you know, their position. Mm-hmm. So she had her U.S. congressional office, but then she had a office adjacent, which was her personal office. And a lot of times, if I had needed to visit her, sometimes we'd go into the personal office and I would call it unplugged. And I could just sit back and ask questions. And to me, I really learned more about how the government works, how the government should work. And one of my favorite stories was she had met Bill Clinton when they were coming up and rising stars in the party. And they were probably recent graduates from college. And so years later, she was in Little Rock for a meeting. And I think at that time, she might have been a U.S. Congresswoman. And this limousine stops and out jumps this young guy. And he says, Ady Bernice. And it was Bill Clinton. He was now governor. She was a U.S. Congresswoman. And remember, they had met probably 10, 15 years earlier. And so when he became president, she became a commandant of Bill Clinton. And she told me that it was common for her to ride on U.S. Air Force One. Wow. And she said he loved McDonald's food. He really loved the biscuits and gravy. Mm-hmm. And she said that if he still had a biscuit and had, I'm going to say sop, because that's what we say, sopped up.
Yep, sop it up. Yep.
Sopped up all of his gravy. She said, Mr. President would take his biscuit and reach into your plate and dip that biscuit in your plate. And so I love the presidential stories, but my most favorite was on Bill Clinton. So I stand by it. Those are fact-based.
She is a legend, by the way, the late, great Ady Bernice Johnson. And again, all the accolades to her for her incredible career. And Roland Parrish, we haven't even talked about some of the awards that you have received over the things that you have done philanthropically, as well as, you know, just being a great businessman and entrepreneur. I'm not sure if you're still this person, if you're still the CEO, but you led the National Black McDonald's Operators Association for years. And back in 2017, the Dallas Business Journal honored you with a Lifetime Achievement Award. Mind you, that was like 7 or 8 years ago. You're still doing what you do. That was just one. And then this past fall in 2024, you were the recipient of the 95th Lens Award. That's one of Dallas's longest civic honors and is given annually by the Dallas Morning News. It recognizes community involvement and humanitarian efforts with a significant impact on Dallas in the last decade. It's presented by the Morning News, the Community Foundation of Texas, and the Dallas Foundation. And I could go on and on and on. I got, you know, 20 years worth of contributions to the St. Philip School and Community Center in South Dallas, over $1 million to the advancement of its students. The McMiracle on Highway 67 since 2003, over 3,000 students receiving bikes and helmets thanks to the donation of more than $300,000. You're involved, of course, since 2010 with Paris Restaurants Limited, the Texas Black Sports Hall of Fame, which, of course, is held and hosted annually at the African American Museum. And you mentioned Dr. Rob, who just retired. He's a legend in himself. And I could say your fingerprints are on over everything. You brought up Purdue, you know, where you got a couple of degrees from. And I believe they renamed and dedicated their management and economics library to the Roland G. Parrish Library of Management and Economics. And also you support Purdue Athletics. You before, I mean, I could go on and on and on, which I will, because, again, you may not like to hear about it because you know that's what you do. But this is why we have you on the show, because sometimes people don't know exactly all of those in various ways who make a big impact around here. And I think you're so worthy. I remember a few years ago, you told me you helped build a hospital in Africa. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, well, of course. Thanks so much for reminding me of some of the things that I engage in, because you do it because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And I remember Mayor Pro Tem and city council person, Tennell Atkins, one time, got me in front of some people in Oak Cliff, and he said, "Now tell them what you do." And I had to pull out a piece of paper and write some stuff down, because you just don't think about it every day.
Right.
And I just, before we get into the Africa clinic, some of the great people that I've been able to meet with the Sports Hall of Fame, George Foreman, former heavyweight champion, the niece of Jack Johnson. There was an honor given to Mr. Roger Staubach, you know, legendary cowboy quarterback. And so it's been some cool guys. And the more I sit here, Billy White Shoes Johnson, Merton Hanks, many of the Dallas Cowboys.
Michael Irvin.
So, Michael Irvin and Charles Haley. Just so many that it's just a pleasure to do that. And you and I have co-hosted a couple times. It's always a lot of fun with you.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know what? Let's go ahead and give a shout out to those who are in there as well that people may not know of. We call those some of the hidden figures, some of the greatest Texas high school or college coaches or tennis stars or golfers.
Right.
The list is unlimited. It's like, wow, you didn't know that person was from Texas, or wow, Michelle Carter, she's an Olympian. Oh yeah, she's from Texas. Right. You can go down the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's been a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. And that really, it was through Dr. Robinson that I began to get my name out a little bit, because it was beyond my market of my restaurants in Pleasant Grove. And a big shout out to Dr. Harry Robinson. Yeah. And so there was a lot of these things have a sports genesis.
Well, so, let me say this again, for those who don't know, you mentioned it casually, quickly, early in this interview. You mentioned that you were an athlete at Purdue. You are a track star. And that requires discipline. In fact, my favorite athlete, I don't know if I ever told you, my favorite athlete of all time is Bruce Lee. And it's only because he said, discipline is the greatest strength. And I know you have said this a number of times. Your discipline as an athlete has led to your business acumen and entrepreneurial success, because it takes patience and discipline to go through all the different things that you've been going through.
Yeah. A lot of truth to that, Chris. And so I was a middle distance guy. Mm-hmm. And so I had to really work hard. Train with the distance men, but then fast enough to sometimes jump in with the sprinters. And I really had to work hard to become an athlete, because I wasn't a 97-pound weakling, but I was sort of like this little fat kid, and I played music. So I would always have a little briefcase with my music. And I began to discover and find that I had talent in track and field. And then it turned out it was the 800 meters, which you're sandwiched between the quarter milers and the milers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to become a state champion in Indiana and a All-American, and then got a full ride Division I to Purdue University. And there I won 6 Big Ten medals, and I made it to 3 NCAA championships.
Nice.
So I think after that, had to really work hard for it and be mentally prepared. I think what I know now, I really think my goal should have been to be a Big Ten champion, to be a conference champion. And so I won 6 Big Ten medals, some silver, a lot of bronze. but I never got to go. And if I had to live life over again, to do that and in the place in the NCAAs would have been a goal. So anyway, it was through, there's a guy named Randy Clark, who was a linebacker at Purdue out of Canton, Ohio, and played at Purdue while I was there. We were in the same class of 71. And he comes to Dallas. One day he happens to come to the Bank of America building. He sees Roland Parrish, goes in and says, "Hey, is this the same Roland Parrish that was in Purdue?" And they say, "Yeah." And so it took a while for us to connect because I wasn't in that day. But we began to connect. And Randy was associated with a charity that wanted to build a clinic in Uganda. And so it took Randy a couple of years, but he finally convinced me to put the dollars to build a clinic, medical clinic in Fort Portal, Uganda. And I decided to name it after my parents, Marie and John Parrish. And the focus of that clinic would be, there were quite a few orphans in that section of Uganda, and they're orphans because their parents have died from HIV and AIDS. And so it serves about 6,000 orphans in that general area annually. And we've done that. We opened in 2015. So we've done it almost, well, this will be the 10-year anniversary. And I'm really pleased with that. And again, it was something that I recognized the need, felt that I could afford it, and glad we put it together. So it's something where I've reached back into the motherland and done this. And I really think my parents would have gotten a kick out of the fact that they have a facility named after them in Africa, because they were deceased when that was built and named. So we really feel good about that.
Yeah.
Something, again, I don't think about a lot now, but we still support them financially. And there's been discussions of expansion, but we've not done that because there have been babies born at the facility, even though it's not really equipped for that. But we've talked about expanding it so that there's pre and postnatal care. So
that's amazing.
So we'll see where it goes.
That is absolutely amazing. Bringing it back home again, you mentioned the athletic things and the athletic excellence and the ties. You've also been collaborating with the Texas Rangers Foundation to create the Charlie Pride Fellowship Program. And of course, everybody knows the late, great Charlie Pride, country music icon, first black superstar in country music. But he was also a baseball player, and I spent a lot of time with him before he passed away as well. He'd always go to Texas Rangers spring training, and he was a part owner of the Texas Rangers. And there's an internship involved with this that you were able to put together and help them?
Yeah, it's been great working with the Texas Rangers organization. As we know, Chris, that there's a, and I'm sure it's a lot better than it was maybe 10 or 15, 20 years ago, but of people of color and women in the front office. And so the focus of this is to expose people of color and women to the front office of the Rangers. And we've had four classes. Each class has five students, which they typically are either at minimum a junior or senior, and some of them are working on their master's degrees or have a master's degree. And we select five, and it's a portal where we actually have a national reach, and five are selected, and then they go through the various rotations of the front office, managing a stadium, the marketing, working with the television stations. And radio stations, working with concessions, working with just the normal operation of the ballpark. And our superstar is a guy named Kendall Jackson, who was, let me correct myself, Kendall Coleman. And he scouted. He was hired on as a scout for the Rangers after he completed the program. And he actually scouted the Arizona Diamondbacks the year when we won the World Series. And I say we because I'm a member of the foundation now.
Yes, sir.
And I felt
did they get
good
you a ring
that.
Too? I got to check because everybody with the Rangers has got some kind of a ring. You get your staff ring or a ring as well?
I got a watch. I got a watch.
At least so, you got something. You got
I
something.
Got something, yeah.
Yeah, that'll work.
And I have to wear it one day when I know I'm going to see you so I can show you.
Got it.
So I got a watch. And I really feel good that I was part of it because
sure.
I've been with the Rangers for a couple of years. So I remember, when Chris Young came in mm-hmm. and he says one day, because, you know, they'll parade different people through. And he says, the year before, right before the start of the season, he says, no, this is not going to take long. Because remember, they had the year when they brought in Corey Seager.
And Marcus Semien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the year before.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, this may not take long. And he was just full of excitement. So I really felt part of that because it was the third year that I was associated with the program. So I really felt part of the Rangers and putting that together, even though, you know, I wasn't on that side of the business. It was more on a charity side. So, Kendall is our superstar. And currently, he is actually with the Milwaukee Bucks organization and he reports to the general manager.
Excellent.
The Milwaukee Brewers.
Right. He's climbed the ladder, though. Yeah.
Yeah, he's climbed the ladder. So, and we have folks sprinkled everywhere. And some of them are current. Some of them have worked for the Denver Broncos, the Seattle Seahawks, mm-hmm. the Dallas Wings, mm-hmm. The Lakers. So we have folks who are working in different capacities with different sports organizations.
And
so
you yourself.
I'm really pleased with this one.
Yeah, and you yourself, you are also part of the Dallas Mavericks Advisory Council for a while, the advisory board. So that was, mm-hmm. like I said, your fingerprints are on a lot of different things, including, like I said, I'm bringing up stuff that you got so much going on. As far as, oh yeah, we're doing this too. St. Mark's School of Texas, the annual fundraising event and efforts that they use to feed the homeless at the Austin Street Center shelter in South Dallas. Mm-hmm. You've been doing that since 2010. What I'm really interested in is the Roland Parish Band Competition, awarding 10 North Texas band programs thousands of dollars for their treasury departments as they compete in band competitions. I love that as well because everybody loves marching bands. They really, really do. Whether it's HBCU, whether it's just college marching bands, or whether it's just high school competitions, people love to watch all that. How did you decide to get into that?
You know, Chris, my hat's off to my team, which includes a young man from, he graduated from Carter, and he also graduated from Texas A&M Commerce. And I'm trying to think of their new name. Isn't it something like you? No, Texas A. Is it Texas A?
It's Texas A&M, something like that. East
yeah.
Texas, yeah. Whatever it is, you must be referring to Rodney Baker.
Yeah, Rodney Baker.
He's amazing.
Something happened like this. So I come with an idea, and I was actually at a playoff game, high school football playoff game, between Duncanville, and I got to give out a shout to Coach Reginald Sample,
the legend.
Who is. I've been a sponsor with him ever since he was at Lincoln. So mm-hmm. we're over 20 plus years as a sponsor. Was with him when he went to Skyline and went to Duncanville. And so I'm watching the game and it's Duncanville against Skyline. And it's probably 4 years ago. And I look at the bands at halftime and I said, you know what? I know that they have weak treasury. You know, they don't have a lot of money, you know, just don't have a lot of money. And so why don't I pick 10 bands, give them $5,000 to their treasury, and that'll be something good to do. Not a lot of hoopla. And so I go to my team, which Rodney leads the team. And then they come back and they said, and I love to hear him say it when he's got a great idea, Mr. Parrish, you know, it's like, he says, instead of just giving them, and they'll still get the $5,000, let's do a battle of the bands. So we began to negotiate with the Texas Rangers because we did have them at the Ranger Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Globe Life Field. And so the band still got the money, but we had a lot of fun with it. Same happened in track and field. In fact, Senator Royce West was out there. And of course, a lot of times, you know, your name ends up, you know, be it the Roland Parish Relays.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I got to tell Royce what's the genesis of this. It wasn't for me to put my name on this track meet. I wanted to give 10 track teams in the Southern sector because Sha'Carri Richardson came out of.
That's right. Sha'Carri Richardson, Michael Johnson.
Michael Johnson.
We've got Olympians. Yeah.
Yeah. They came out of track teams in the Southern sector that don't have a big treasury. So I go again to my team and I say, I want to pick 10 teams, summer track teams, and give them $5,000. So when they have to send kids to nationals, they don't have to stand on the corner or wash cars.
Right. To raise that. The money. Yeah.
And so they come back and it's like, Mr. Parrish, we're going to have a track meet. And so I told Royce that. And he said he understood. So he's supposed to contribute and sponsor one of the teams next year. So what we're going to do, Chris, it's a little difficult working sometimes with Globe Life, because one year we had it set and then the Cowboys had a playoff game. Mm-hmm. We got to work parking because the Cowboys won.
Sharing the parking lots, yeah.
Yeah, and then people even coming out of the community, because we still have a lot of DISD schools, even though sometimes we reach as far as Beaumont, and we have even some HBCU schools come. But we're in final negotiations with the Cotton Bowl. The Cotton Bowl in Fair Park wants us.
Right there.
And so, yeah, even though it's open air, mm-hmm. The band say, hey, all the football games we play mostly on the open air.
That's so right.
And not to contend with the weather.
Exactly.
And then it's right there in the community.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably be a little bit less expensive, because if a family of four or six, that'd be a great event they want to go to, and they don't have to try to get across town. It'd be a little less expensive. So we hope to kick off in 2025 and have our third Bell of the Bands. And again, it's really to put money in the treasury. But it, again, you can hear it like, Mr. Parrish, got this great idea. Let's have some fun.
Right.
So I'm all out.
It's a win-win for everybody. Yeah, it's just a win-win. Yeah. Speaking of communities, let's talk about a couple of things before we let you get out of here. Communities making a comeback. You know where I'm going with this. It's the reimagining of Redbird Project. This is the formerly Redbird Mall, and now they're bringing in all kinds of jobs, hundreds of jobs, businesses, small businesses, including large hotels, Marriott Hotel, Baylor Scott and White. I mean, all these different hospitals and clinics. This is a 200,000 square feet medical clinic services over there, the Parkland UT Southwestern Medical Center, the whole nine yards. And you're the second largest investor in this. I think it's another win-win opportunity. And I'm glad you're doing that as well. So is there anything you want to say about that before I wrap this thing up with another thing that I know you're proud about? That's a surprise.
Well, I got to tell you, Chris, when you talked about the community and I knew where you're going, I had no clue where you're going. And then as soon as you said Redbird, and that has to be one of the things that I'm probably most proud of. I've been associated with the Redbird project or shops at Redbird. I was introduced to Peter Brodsky, who mm-hmm. is developer and obviously the number one investor. I was introduced to that by Willis Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and thank you, Willis.
Yeah,
and I'm really proud of what we've done. I remember going to the listener sessions and listening to what the community wanted. They wanted a mixed use development. They wanted to be able to go to see a doctor without having to go downtown.
Right.
So we've been able to put some things together. So the next big hurdle, which was in the paper, we pretty much thought we had a deal with Tom Thumb, but mm-hmm. that fell through. So we're got to pivot,
yeah,
like you do in sports.
Yep.
And so we hope to overcome that. But that's the next one. I will throw this plug in. That Starbucks there is one of the top 10 Starbucks in the nation.
In the country, yes.
Yeah, on sales volume. And in that Foot Locker is one of the top 10 also. And it was, even when it was on the inside, mm-hmm. one of the top retail locations for Foot Locker. And so on the outside is there. And I think a lot of times when new shoes are introduced, that's where they introduce them nationwide.
Exactly.
Right there.
Exactly.
So really proud of that. Really
well, proud of that. I'm going to tell you something that you're also really proud about. And I was so glad to be there when it happened, when they announced that they were renaming and dedicating a park in your honor, the Roland Parrish Park, right? It's final corner from Roosevelt High School. Can you talk about how that happened? And again, I like the concept of why you're having a park there and the things that the people, the kids, the seniors can do over there when it's all completed.
Yeah, Chris, and thank you so much for taking time to come out. Some friends were asking me today. I said, hey, I said, I got to make sure that I'm available for Chris because you show up a lot. And I greatly want you to know from my heart, bottom of my heart, I greatly appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're hoping, you know, we have some funds from the city in the first bond and then in a second bond. And we're really, what I really want to do is try to model the Juanita Craft Park and Center, where eventually we have a community center. And right now, I know there's some discussions. I'm not sure which, well, I don't want to say which hospital, but that it might be the Eddie Bernice Johnson Community Center that would be on the Parish Park. That would be poetic justice, where people in the community, usually you partner, public-private partnership, you partner with the hospital, with the city, and with business. So I represent the business side. The city of Dallas, of course, with the bond money has dollars involved. And if we're able to get a hospital come to the table where you actually have a doctor in the center, you know, a lot of activities are for preventive care where, you know, they have classes, aerobic classes. It's expensive to have a pool, but they may have water aerobics. They all have dietitians there that could talk to people about diet. And so that would be great if we're able to get that along with the Parish Park in Cadillac Heights. And I hope to just live long enough that I can, you know, we have a track, we don't have a football field, but we have a soccer field, you know, a lot of amenities that the children play and use. And so I just hope I could get up in the mornings and go out and do a little walking or jogging on a track at Parish Park. And I feel so proud of that. So, and again, I do thank you for your support as a good person, as a fraternity brother, as a mentor for my son. And you're just all around good guy, Chris. So thank you very much. And thank you for bringing some of these things that I don't even think about. I had a list that I had in front of me, and half of these things I didn't even have listed. I didn't know what direction you might go. But no, thank you very much, man. You're a great guy. No. And how about that game last night?
Yeah, that was amazing. Hey, Roland, thank you so much for joining us again. Your story is one that needed to be told a long time ago, and it continues to be amazing. I will get you on this show again before too long, but I can't thank you enough for sharing it. Thank you, Roland. Roland Parrish.
Hey. And Chris, all you got to do is ask. Hey, thank you very much.
And joining us right now is Odyssey meteorologist Dan Brunoff. Dan, at KRLD and all of our sister stations, he's the guy we turn to about weather when things are going on here in North Texas or when things are not going on here. Whether it's wintertime, whether it's summertime, we got triple digits. He's the guy that we talk to about how to prepare the families, the homes, the vehicles, the pets, for whatever the conditions may be, ice, snow, freezing temperatures, what do you guys like to call it, wintry mix? Dan Brunoff is the guy to turn to. Dan, the man, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, good, Chris. Appreciate you having me on.
Especially after what's been rolling in through the North Texas area over the last couple of days. Can you talk about, is this the way it's going to be all the way through how long?
Well, you know, it's virtually impossible. I tell people on my meteorologist Dan Brunoff Facebook page that what's it going to be like? I got a wedding at the end of February and it's, you know, the beginning of January, or, you know, what's the winter going to be like? And I, you know, Chris, to be honest
Texas,
with you, I have enough trouble getting day seven right.
Yeah. Because in North Texas, does the, you know, I minored in meteorology, so I can remember a few things here and there. Does it have anything to do with the winds coming out of Colorado along that Red River that kind of makes the weather hard to predict around here?
Well, yeah, our location where we are here in North Texas, and we're farther south in latitude, of course. I mean, heck, we're along Interstate 20. We're not along I-70 there in the heart of the plains, or 90, 94 up in Dakotas and parts of Minnesota. But we got a body of water, Gulf of Mexico to our south, right? We've got a lower elevation, 600 to 800 feet above sea level from Dallas to Fort Worth. We have a big mountain range of about 1,000 miles to our west, out New Mexico and Colorado, all the way up into Canada, right? And so we have different air masses. We could have a humid day when the winds are from the south for 2 or 3 days. We get a lot of humidity around here in the winter, spring. And then we get the cold fronts that come down. Sometimes they come out of Canada. Sometimes they come out of the Pacific Northwest, which we call maritime air, which isn't nearly as cold. Canadian air starts in Canada. And depending on how far south the snowpack is, right now it extends all the way down to Kansas because of the last storm they saw several days ago. And there's snow all through Canada to the pole. bowl, right? Then you can get air that comes on the, from the other side of the globe in Siberia, and if the winds are blowing the right direction in the upper levels, that can come over the pole and directly down and butt itself up against the Rockies and just spill into North Texas. So we have to have several ingredients to produce a winter storm around here. If the temperatures like they were the other day are close to freezing, then it's hard to predict until 6 hours out about how much precipitation we're going to see once we see stuff on radar. People asked me before last earlier storm, 3 or 4 days before, how much snow are we going to see and what type of precipitation is going to fall? Freezing rain, sleet, snow. That's virtually impossible when temperatures hover near freezing during an event like we just had. So you're going to have a wide range of heavier snow where the air is a little colder up towards the Red River, mixed precipitation in Dallas-Fort Worth, and all rain in Waco and Austin. So, but when temperatures are in the 20s and in the teens, like we saw for 2021, we were well below freezing and we had still had these disturbances come out of the desert southwest. So anything that fell was going to be snow. So it's really difficult. There's so many variables as we analyze the data as it comes in every hour and 6 hours to determine on, you know, what are we going to see? How's it going to impact our travel? Is it going to close school? Is it empty out the grocery store? So again, it's a 24-hour forecast with wintry weather around here and a 6-hour lead forecast when you're near freezing like we were the other day.
Oh, I hear you. I'm glad you're here because a lot of people who may have moved down here recently or who used to live in the Northwest or they're visiting, I say Northwest, Northeast from New England or maybe up Minnesota, maybe in the Northwest up there in Oregon or Washington, they're just so surprised that, you know, there's a lot of ice and wintry mix and they're used to fluffy snow. And how come people down here can't drive in the snow? Because they can drive in their fluffy snow. Yeah. Can you talk about the wintry mix versus fluffy snow elsewhere around the country?
Yeah, that's a big deal as far as precip type. We tend to get more freezing rain events. That's rain hitting the ground and then freezing on contact. That's that clear glaze. And then you get sleet, which are those little pellets that bounce off the hood of your car. That's a little easier to drive on because it does have some traction to it, like we saw with Leon Led in the end zone back in 93. Oh, yeah. He didn't have much traction, but cars have a little bit more. And then you get more of a heavy wet snow that's pretty easy to drive on. But we don't have a plethora of snow plows, an arsenal of snow plows like they do once you get north of Interstate 40 from Kansas City to Denver all the way up to the plains, to the Midwest, and even into the northeastern United States. They spend the revenue, they spend the tax dollars to equip the city to be able to do snow removal as it's snowing so it doesn't get too deep, and then finally do that last scrape if you get any refreezing the next morning. Here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I think we average 1.5 inches of snow annually.
Wow.
So why spend the tax dollars on something you're not going to use that often?
Exactly. So let's talk about some of the situations you mentioned in 2021. I think that was the year, maybe it was 2020. I can't remember exactly, but that was the year that Oncor and ERCOT had issues with power outages and people freezing in their homes. Can you talk about that type of winter storm as opposed to, like you mentioned, the fluffy snow type?
Yeah, the heavy wet snow and the mixed bag of precip we saw just the other day, you know, that stuff is a big nuisance. Can cause power outages when you have heavy, heavy snow building up, which we saw. But temperatures are hovering near freezing, so it melts off during the afternoon, even though it's still precipitating. And then at night, it gets heavier like we saw, and it starts to build up, right? But then by 3 p.m. the next day, if the sun comes out, half of it's already gone. But in 2021, we went 10 days straight with temperatures below freezing, and we could have broken the record set back in 1980, I think it was 84, where we saw 14 consecutive days of sub-freezing weather at the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. So 2021, we had two or three disturbances coming through overriding this air that was in the single digits, teens, and low 20s. So it's a given as a forecaster. Yeah, we're going to see snow. How much? Well, we'll see some. It'll be the fluffy snow, like you said, poor snowball making. And Yeah, this is what's going to happen. The big question back then was, of course, when's the power going to come back on? Because no one had any idea that their grid was going to fail.
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying, when are we going to get above freezing so we can get rid of this stuff and go about, you know, about again? So that's the difference between 2021 and this last event is not nearly as cold. And also, it didn't last long. So that's a huge difference. And it also doesn't put that big of a stress on the power grid as well.
Okay, it's the middle of January. How long does, quote unquote, these wintery type conditions last in North Texas? You and I have been here a long time. We know, but there are people like, it's going to be over in February. I think it usually goes to like March, doesn't it?
You know, it snowed on Easter Sunday here in North Texas.
Look out. Sure
and
did.
I don't know the exact year and day. I don't know the exact year and date, but I know in Abilene, when I was out there doing TV weather from 06 to 2011, that I think it was Easter of 2008, mm-hmm. of 2008. And I think it was Easter was late that year. I think it was like April 8th or 10th or something. We saw 3 inches of snow out in Abilene. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it can snow up to early April, but we have. Usually, climatologically speaking, we see the most snow. Isn't much, but if we get any big events, it's typically that last week of January and the first 2 to 3 weeks of February. That, if you look at all the historical data all the way back to 1898, when records started being kept in North Texas, that I've looked and geeked out on that stuff when I don't have much to do. Yeah, I'm a lot of fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll look at that stuff, and you know, just conversation for people, meet him, see him at the grocery store, or I use it on KRLD. And you know, historically, how much snow have we ever seen with one storm? You know, yeah. Which is over 12 inches in 24 hours. That was in 2010. It comes in handy to be kind of a statistician. And you know, you're in the basketball and with the Mavericks and all that. And the more you know about your career, the better you sound, and the credibility builds, things like that. So I know for a fact that late January, the first few weeks of February, typically we see our biggest ice and snow events. But like we just had one the other day, what was it, the 9th of January? Mm-hmm. We've had snow Christmas, New Year's Eve. We've had
snowed
on Halloween before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I remember Christmas and yeah, Thanksgiving.
That's the earliest snowfall.
Yeah, you mentioned the Leon Legg game. That was the Cowboys versus the Dolphins. That was on Thanksgiving. I'm thinking about the Super Bowl because yep. You and I were talking off the air a little earlier about when Green Bay won the Super Bowl here against Pittsburgh, the weather conditions were just crazy. And that was like the first week in February. Can you talk about that kind of weather?
Yeah, I mean, it can happen. I mean, that in February, that falls in that late January, first 3 week of February timeframe, which we typically, if we're going to see major storms, we got a 50-50 shot of it happening between that timeframe and any other timeframe. So what happened with that is we had all that precipitation, sub-freezing weather, and then Super Bowl Sunday, the sun came out and started to melt some of that stuff off the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And those sheets of ice, you've seen the videos on YouTube,
yeah.
Or somebody
yeah.
pokes the roof just for the snow, all that snow to fall on them for clicks and likes. Well, when you're 100 feet in the air and you need 2-inch pieces of sheets of ice falling down, I think 8 or 10 people actually got injured with that falling ice.
Yeah.
So again, that was because of the melting process.
In fact, people have no idea how dangerous that can be, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Super Bowl, I don't know which one that was, but it was in 2011. We had a lot of precipitation, some freezing rain, some sleet, some snow leading up to Super Bowl Sunday. Temperatures were well below freezing. And during the day, the sun came out, temperatures got a little bit above freezing, and all that precipitation that had built up on the roof of AT&T Stadium, well, it started to break off and fall down on people going into the game. You got tens of thousands of people walking on the perimeter outside the stadium. And I think of 8 or 10 people actually got injured. There were no fatalities, but
Thank goodness.
That's a very dangerous situation. And that's something that I'm sure they're aware of now.
Okay, so we've got various dangerous type situations that can occur in winter weather. We mentioned the freezing temperatures where people need to stay warm. You mentioned the ice and the wintry mix, which makes traveling on the highways kind of tricky. Can you talk about how people can prepare for some of these situations, especially in 2025?
Well, for sure, we haven't touched on the homes at all.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I have a temperature in my head, typically anything below 25 degrees, okay? Below that, that's pipe bursting weather, okay? That's when your spigots outside that your hose connects to. Those are usually the first to go. And then you have exterior walls within your home, businesses, or apartments that you have to worry about as well. And we try to beat it in everybody's head every year. Make sure you insulate your spigots outside, disconnect your hoses. Indoors, open your cabinet doors on exterior walls. Let your faucets drip. Not just the cold side, but the hot side as well. You want to do those together. Also, try to keep your heat at a tolerable level, depending on what Encore suggests, because of the previous problems we've had. Sometimes they say to keep it at about 62 degrees if we're trying to conserve energy. Most people keep it right around 68. That's the comfort zone for the human body to be able to be comfortable. But you get down into the teens for lows, or you get down into the single digits, what doesn't happen very often. That's typically where our record lows are in the heart of winter, late January and February, single digits, low teens. Then you become a serious problem. And then people that have their thermostats up around 68, everybody, that really puts a stress on the power grid. And ERCOT now puts out these watches that let people be aware of, hey, this may happen. And then they upgrade those watches to, you know, warnings, rolling blackouts, things like that. But you can protect your home as best as you can, because water it's fun to swim in, right? But it's the most dangerous and miserable thing. It can cause fatalities with flash flooding if you live near creeks and streams. And also, you flood out your house. It's the worst thing that can happen.
Oh,
and if you're a first, if you live, and when I lived in apartments briefly after my life changed several years ago, two reasons I picked the third floor. One, because I had a killer view looking west watching the storms come in. And the second reason was, I'll say idiot if I allow my pipes to burst and flood everybody else below me. So living on that third floor is smart, because as long as you do the right things in your apartment, you don't have to worry about it, because that water, because of gravity, of course, goes down. So those are just some tips around the house that you can do. Again, this time of the year in winter, the times you really need to heed warnings and winterize your homes. Don't forget your vehicles as well. Antifreeze topped off. I just got my car worked on. He goes, you need antifreeze. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Your tires, make sure your tire pressure is okay. That exclamation point with the two parentheses around it that show up on your dashboard after temperatures fell into the 20s the night before and you get in and go to work, that's tire pressure. So they lose PSI as the temperatures get colder. And there are places and automotive places that you can actually drive through and they'll give you free air, which I've already done three times so far this winter. And also make sure your cars at least have a half tank of gas in it. You got some cash on you for sure. If we got a big prolonged winter weather event, you have non-perishable foods. Everybody buys milk, bread, and eggs. No, I make sure my grill's cool and I got plenty of propane.
There you go.
Because that's what will heat things up.
Mm-hmm.
Or
just in case.
Yeah. And then like I did in 2021, I took everything out of the freezer and the refrigerator, anything that was non-perishable. I have several coolers. I open the lid up. I put them outside. And it's a free Mother Nature freezer to help your food stay, well, frozen. Until the power comes back on and you can transfer it back to where it needs to go.
Any tips for the pets?
Indoors, man.
Yeah.
Totally.
Seriously.
Indoors. I say on the air, I was like, bring your pets indoors unless you want to sleep outside with them tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And because I tell you one thing, nobody's going to want to go sleep outdoors when it's 20 degrees out. So that kind of just reminds them that, you know, they say plants, pipes, people, pets. I always go pets first, then people, then pipes, then plants. Those are the most serious at the top. Is anything with a heartbeat, you got to make sure you make sure that they stay warm.
Exactly. And if you say, I just don't want them in the house, you better take care of them in the garage. You better figure out the blankets. You better fill out the doggy beds and all the things that'll keep them all nice and cozy. Just like you said, Dan, if you want everybody to be okay, treat them like your kids.
Yeah, exactly, man. Or would you want to sleep outside all night?
No, exactly. Good stuff. Well, Dan, I appreciate the update on the winter weather, and we will have you back on again when things start getting toasty again. Appreciate you so much, Dan.
Hey, appreciate your time. Have fun. Stay warm.
All right. That's Dan Brunoff. He is the chief meteorologist for KRLD, our Odyssey sister station. And want to thank you all for joining Some Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.